Day. Gotta wait for some folks to trickle in. If anyone wants to hop up chat while we wait a little bit, I thought we'd kind of do an overview of the thing since new users are showing up and probably don't know what Zephyr does. So certainly maybe DM your friends or whatever if they don't know what this is and would like to know. Good morning, Clutch. You doing all right?
Good morning, fam. How you doing? Here, let me pin the space up at the top. We're doing great, man. Had our morning shows, a very good convo. Let's like and repost the room, guys. Let's get more people in here.
I heard that. It seems like the vibe amongst some of the developer crowd is they're like worried about getting caught up, selling securities essentially and what to say and what not to say about their projects.
Nah, yeah, man. We naturally just kind of surround ourselves with a lot of that crowd, right? We're alpha chasers and, NFT projects, coins. So we meet a lot of developers. And I think that's something you 100% have to be mindful of if you're a long-term guy, right? If you're just traveling through the space, you're going to make your money and get out. It may not matter. But for people that really see their future and businesses and, all that fun stuff, right? I think it's important to make sure you're covering your ass right now. You know, that CYA life is very important.
Yeah, they've gone after some, influencer types or whatever on YouTube and that kind of thing regarding coins and shit that they have been given early allocations for, and then they pump them on YouTube or whatever. So that's technically illegal. So it's probably a bad idea to do that. Dark Cyan, what's up, man?
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Good, good. What you doing?
Working on a Saturday. But I was introduced to Zep at $5. I didn't necessarily fade it. It was more like it's just on some weird crappy exchange. I'm in Canada. I can't use Mexi. So I've learned that some people who are very smarter, a lot smarter than me, go to the 30-page white paper and found practically no red flags on the Telegram. Other than that, I'm extremely bullish on this project. So I guess my question is, I want to be able to mine it, and I have no knowledge of it. Hoping I can get some resources, learning how.
Your voice is kind of really weak, by the way. Something's wrong with your microphone, I think.
Let me grab some other.
But, yeah, no problem. we can cover a little bit of that. Yeah, there's with any new blockchain, there's risks, and then figuring out what risks matter, which ones are going to actually materialize and turn to something bad is really important. We can probably cover some of that if people want to cover the different FUD layers. FUD is not a bad term. It's like fear, uncertainty, doubt. Those are all appropriate things to consider anytime you're honestly buying anything, including a product at the store. how long does this vacuum cleaner going to work? Is it going to break? Am I going to get a refund if it breaks? Is it, how much do parts cost if it breaks? There's all sorts of things when you buy a product or whatever that you have to care about. Certainly in crypto space. Zephyr Protocol is a proof of work chain. And as a proof of work chain, the security of the network is based in the hash rate, which is the work that the miners are doing to both pay themselves by mining new tokens, but also in the process of doing so, generating the actual security of the network. when people talk about 51% attack and proof of work, it means that you have enough hashing power as an individual miner or mining pool to take over the network and essentially, dictate consensus, which means that you can basically like do anything with the network that you want. So ideally, you want to see proof of work networks that have decent decentralization. It is helpful that individuals are mining. One of the benefits of CPU mining, which the Monero community has been a fan of, is that you can do this on a personal computer, which is like generally accessible cost-wise to an average human being. Whereas ASIC miners and huge amounts of ASIC power is something that like the average person doesn't want to buy. And therefore, it tends to focus on industrial scale miners. And the RandomX platform with Monero specifically goes away from ASIC miners and prefers to use ASIC-resistant algorithms that require a CPU and RAM and all the usual things that are in a computer. So this is kind of a good thing. Now, does that mean that we have decent decentralization of the network? I don't know. Some of the different pools that are out there also are pools that tend to mine other things. Typically, we haven't seen mining pools try to initiate any types of attacks in crypto that I'm aware of. I don't remember any of the headlines that are really big. It's always a source of FUD, like what if, you know, the largest Bitcoin miners collude to take over the network, things like that. But, you know, it hasn't really happened. And individual users of mining pools can actually disassociate with those mining pools if they'd like as well. So anyway, there's a lot of different components to that, but without getting too far into the weeds with how proof of work actually works, generally proof of work networks have been pretty safe. And most situations, the concern for a 51% attack has not actually materialized. It just takes a lot of money and hashing power to dedicate to this purpose. And really, in a coin the size and market cap of Zeph, like, there just isn't enough reason for anyone to 51% attack it at this point, unless they legitimately just want to destroy it for some reason. Because there's just not enough money in it, quite frankly. Like, it's just too expensive to initiate an attack. Because as you said, let's say you were to give yourself tokens and you were to go try to sell these things, there's not enough liquidity out there to really not cause a lot of slippage in price and everything. It's just not rational to try to attack a network of this size. And as you do it, you're going to cause a lot of slippage and the market cap would go down and your actual bag would go down. So, you're not going to be able to like slip away with the money that easily. You'd have to be like in a much bigger market cap to even make that worthwhile. And by then, usually what happens in proof of work networks is more miners appear, more individual miners, more pools, whatever. Because if the coin is useful, then that's usually reflected in market cap going up. And as the market cap going up happens, you have more miners that believe that the chain is useful. And there's a feedback loop where more miners secure the network and the odds of a singular attacker decreases as time goes on. So 51% attack type problems become much less likely, you know, after a project's been around for years. If you want a project that's been around for years, that would be something like a Bitcoin. It'd be something like a Monero. It'd be something like any of the proof of work chains that were out since the early days. So, you know, there's always those options if you want the sort of secure thing. Anytime you're going for a relatively new network, you have to assume that, you know, your security is not fully there yet. It's quite possible. And there could be vulnerabilities and other problems that were not obvious yet. So in that setting, like with higher gains and lower market cap and higher potential rewards comes higher risk. That's how life works. If you can't swallow the higher risk, then you shouldn't be involved with small market cap coins of any kind. Or if you want to play, you know, you would do so with a very small allocation and not risk anything substantial. So, you know, maybe the cost of a Big Mac or something like that, you know, so it's fun to ride, you know, the wave, but like you should be comfortable no matter what with all of your shit going to zero when it comes to crypto systems. There have been substantial systems that have gone to substantial size in different networks and have suffered from serious problems. And remember, like you could have a problem like, say, for example, Mexi gets hacked. MEXC gets hacked, a lot of liquidity for this is on MEXC. If someone were to, like, you know, run away with your tokens and sell them somewhere, well, guess what? Price of number goes down. So the reality is, like, there are a lot of different reasons why network security and just asset security increases over time, and why very small projects are very high risk. So kind of certainly, if you haven't considered all of the various ways microcap can go to zero, you just haven't been around here long enough. Like, it can happen in a lot of different ways. And it doesn't have to do necessarily with maliciousness from the protocol itself, or necessarily something malicious from, say, an exchange. But if you're around for Mt. Gox, you understand what happened there. You know, exchange gets hacked, you know, Bitcoin gets taken, and all hell breaks loose, right? Like, so, and that led to very serious decline in the price of Bitcoin at the time. So centralized exchanges are a risk vector, and you know, the longer those centralized exchanges exist, the less likely a risk is going to happen. But even fairly sizable exchanges have had hacks and things. So until this token, this coin actually, is on more exchanges, you should consider that a particular risk vector. There's other vectors too, like in the case of ZEF. Some of the, so the project functions on an Oracle system to handle its stablecoin and its like conversion from ZEF to the stablecoin, which is ZSD. And those Oracle systems could theoretically be hacked or manipulated either by the protocol owner themselves, or they could be manipulated by outside forces of some kind, maybe attack the Oracle somehow. So, you know, I'm not saying it will happen, but Oracle risks are a definite thing. And that's the reason why, like, companies like Chainlink have spent so much time and effort over years developing decent Oracle networks to handle larger and larger amounts of value transfers. So if, I think today, one of the most tried and true sort of Oracle mechanisms out there is basically Chainlink. Full disclosure, I own a bag of Chainlink. So, you know, if you buy it, you make my number go up. That's just how it goes. But basically, Oracle systems, you know, may not be very robust. And in this particular protocol, a failure of their Oracle for some reason would lead to bad things generally, such as the ability to mint unusual amounts of ZSD or ZEF or either direction or whatever. So that could be a factor. So anyway, what else? Other risk factors in small protocols is, like, you don't know how good their wallets are. You don't know how good their, you know, websites are for web wallets and things like that. You don't know how secure all of that is. Fortunately, in this space, a lot of this has been worked out for many, many years with previous projects like Monero and others. And the creation of wallets and things is not, like, a very new technology. Like, a lot of that's very, very simple, and you can fork it from previous projects and just copy secure, successful projects, which is fair. And I think this particular project seems to have done a fair amount of that. I think that's much better than trying to innovate something brand new, because security is something you learn about not just because of the tech or maybe an audit, but you learn about security based on, like, how many people have tried to manipulate or attack the system, attack a wallet, figure out exploits, and that just simply takes time. Like, you'll notice that you get you download security updates for your computer over years and years. You know, Apple will come up with some new thing, or Microsoft will come up with something, some updates, whatever, and they realize they broke something, and then they go and, you know, do a security patch or update. And you get those all the fucking time, right? Like, all the time. So in many ways, wallet infrastructure, protocols for, like, hashing algorithms like RandomX, like this uses, you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel once you know that there's a method that works well and that is reasonably unhackable. You don't want to necessarily start all over from scratch. So I think, you know, Zephyr comes at a time when a lot of these things have been worked out. It uses RandomX protocol, which is the same as Monero. They've made some adjustments to be able to accommodate a stablecoin within the system. And I'm not a GitHub geek. I have no idea how safe that is or whatever, how good the code is. But so far, the people that have looked at the code felt like it's pretty elegant that I'm aware of. I think you can go to their Discord if you want to figure out what kind of FUD's going on, or maybe ask questions about the details of these things. reality is, like, unless you're like a tech geek, you won't know what the, if the explanation is true or not. You'll have to rely on somebody that knows what they're talking about, probably, to make sure that it's safe. And so I don't spend too much time in that space. I kind of like listen for the FUD, and I'm like, well, is that FUD viable? I just sort of assume, like, I'm not going to know if FUD is real or not. I'm not going to assume, like, and I just assume my money's going to go to zero. That's just my general, like first principle here. And so if everything works as intended, you know, the Wright brothers plane, it flies and, you know, nobody dies, well, then that's great. But the presumption should be that the plane will crash and everyone will die inside of it. Like, that way you don't wind up, you know, allocating too many resources to something like this. What made me particularly interested in this is that this particular chain comes at a time, you know, where we have had a confluence of events over a period of, I would say, almost 10 years that seems to have culminated in the type of technology necessary to create this particular chain. So one thing we had was, you know, the existence of Monero going back, I think, to 2014 and before that, and the fact that Monero has maintained a stable ecosystem for all that time. That's a good sort of bellwether for this, or like canary in the coal mine. The canary has survived, and so therefore that's a good sign. What else? Also, we've had a variety of stablecoin projects crash and burn. I think the ones that are most notable are Luna UST, things like Iron Finance, and a variety of others. We've also seen things like the depegging of Tether, the depegging of Circle USD. USDC, as it's known. You guys saw that depeg. I don't remember when it was now. It's like earlier in the year. And so even centralized systems can depeg their stablecoins. So there has been a lot learned in terms of how these things depeg, how much collateral you have to back them, how much reflexivity there needs to be to restore peg between not only on-chain, but to restore peg across various exchanges. So for example, if you have a stable coin that's worth $1.10 on one exchange and 90 cents on another exchange, there's going to be a tendency for people to buy it on the more the cheaper exchange and sell it on the more expensive one, then therefore driving the price of the stable coin back to parity with $1. That's called arbitrage, and that speed that happens at will determine how closely your particular stablecoin will remain at peg. This happens with Circle. This happens with Tether. This happens with all of the stablecoins that are out there. None of them are like CBDCs that are, you know, issued by the government, and therefore they do not have any direct dollar remittance with, like, say, for example, the Federal Reserve or, you know, the Treasury. So you can't just go with your your Tether or your Circle. They're basically securities packaged in a stablecoin format. So they're kind of an interesting sort of monetary instrument that the public really loves to use, but they're not necessarily one-to-one with the dollar exactly. And the only guarantee you have is that when you go back to Circle or Tether, they will give you $1 back for $1 worth of the stablecoin. And then some exchanges, like, for example, Coinbase, will give you $1 of stablecoin always with USDC. They will guarantee remittances at one-to-one because they have an agreement with Circle or whatever to do so. So that kind of backing is a part of this process. But if you don't have direct dollar-to-dollar backing or backed by short-term treasuries or something like that, like Tether might have, then you have to have some kind of collateral backing system. And the problem with collateral is, like, what collateral are you going to use? Even gold is volatile. Even you know, compared to the dollar. Like, if gold was always $2,000, we could peg it to gold, maybe. But it's not that stable. Bitcoin's not stable enough. Zeph is not necessarily stable enough. Monero is not stable enough. So you have to have a collateral that is always worth more than the amount of liabilities, i.e. the stablecoin that you've issued. And in order to do that, you have to have substantial amounts of collateral, such as so that, like, if the value of the collateral goes down in value, then you are still sufficiently collateralized where people feel like they could go back to the original mechanism, trade their stablecoin in, and get you know, appropriate levels of collateral back for that. So this is kind of the idea. This is why kind of like Zeph has a ZRS or Zeph reserve token in between Zeph and the stablecoin. And in order to print the stablecoin, you have to have sufficient quantities of the Zephyr locked in the reserve. And that reserve is a minimum 400% over collateralization. This whole concept came from, I believe, the DJED protocol or DJED. You can kind of look that up. And there's like a, they have deployed on Cardano. I don't know how popular that has become as far as like actual DeFi utilization. I think stablecoins are something that are popular with people, but they're hard to get to mass adoption. There's a strong first mover advantage with like Tether. There's a pretty decent mover advantage with USDC. Both of those have gotten fairly sizable. On Ethereum, DAI has gotten fairly sizable. Some people like that one. Although DAI, I would argue, is just like, you know, they're using USDC as part of their backing, which doesn't make any sense. Because if USDC gets censored or blocked, then your DAI is not worth the same thing anymore. So DAI is kind of a, I'm not sure what the point of it is, honestly. Like, to me, it makes more sense to just use USDC if you're going to rely upon something like that, or just use Tether. Because why would you want to have a risk on top of a risk? It just doesn't make any sense. So these are kind of some issues with these various stablecoin mechanisms. And one of the big things about stablecoins is like the crashes. Why did they happen? They happen due to a lack of reflexivity and due to mint burn mechanisms that tend to hyperinflate the underlying collateral. That was like the Luna UST situation. They also happen because of a lack of decentralized remittances. They happen because exchanges like Binance, like KuCoin, they don't actually give you one-to-one for your stablecoin. They rely upon market makers to provide that arbitrage. And if the market makers feel the risk is too high to repeg your token, then guess what market makers do? They don't do it. They don't want to take the risk of bringing your Luna UST from like 50 cents back to a dollar, because it would take billions of dollars of their hard-earned money to do so. And there's no guarantee of that actually working. So a bank run type situation happens. So why do we care in the Zeph system to have a stablecoin there? What's the point? If it doesn't work or there's a high risk for it, like why bother? Well, when you have an over-collateralized stablecoin, and right now the Zeph stablecoin is over-collateralized about 2,000+%. Because the value of Zeph is substantially higher and the collateral value is substantially higher than the stable, the benefit of having it over-collateralized is that the risk of a bank run is high and the risk of manipulating the system to, say, for example, buy short positions on Zeph or buy short positions on ZSD, it's not worth it, because the over-collateralization means that like people just simply take advantage of the arbitrage, and you'll find buyers and sellers to sort of fix the peg. So that's kind of like the reason for that. And then the plus, you know, the extra benefit in the Zeph system is that there's a privacy system. And as a privacy coin, it's actually harder to manipulate the system in some ways, because you don't know what the other actors are doing. That's another little like mild advantage. Another advantage is like, if you have your Zeph tokens, you don't have to go to a centralized exchange to convert to stablecoin. You can do it within protocol. The protocol issues a liability in the form of ZSD, and you can convert your tokens over without using a centralized exchange. That makes it fairly robust, and it makes it highly likely that value will become trapped within the ecosystem as opposed to leaving the ecosystem to go to, say, for example, sell for Tether or something like that. So there is a feedback loop that occurs with this particular protocol that captures value that's very different from, say, Monero, Zcash, Dash, that's different from even how Luna UST works, especially when you add the privacy mechanism. And what this does not do is it does not have any DeFi baked in. You can't borrow off your Zeph. You can't, you know, to loop it and buy more Zeph. You can't within the system, you can't just basically borrow money off of your coins, essentially, like within the ecosystem. So there's less risk of leverage associated problems. Now, having said all that, like when leveraged Zeph becomes available in the form of true leverage, where you're actually buying and selling tokens as a result of buying the position, that can lead to more market like chaos in the sense that like the Zephyr, like in other words, if someone takes a 5x long on BitMEX or somewhere, and they're able to pump the price of the ZEF token and then mint a lot of stablecoin, and then you suddenly have a crash during a big market correction of the underlying collateral, then you can wind up with an under collateralized state, which then requires people to mint more of the ZRS collateral. Now, the system is geared to allow people to mint the collateral token as long as the collateralization drops even just under 800%, which is pretty good. And the incentives to get the collateral are pretty high because the yield from the transactions of the network are paid out to the people that own that collateral. And it's actually hard to acquire it because it's rare that you actually have the collateral, in a position where you can actually convert. So that's another interesting mechanism. Now, you could argue that that's not a good enough mechanism. I think it's fair to say that you should consider the ZSD token, in my view, you should consider it as a convenient stable coin and not a place where you're going to store your money. Like, I would use it if, like, maybe to convert to ZEF to some of the stable, maybe pay a friend with it or something. I might use it as a trading vehicle within the wallet. But am I like really, really concerned of using it as like, I'm going to turn this into my bank account or something and convert all my dollars into ZSD and park it there? I don't think so. It's by definition a quasi stable coin in that like the market makers are going to have to ultimately be the ones that peg this thing to a dollar. And it's not going to be an exact dollar probably most of the time for quite some time. So that is something to sort of be aware of. I would use it as a like convenience instrument, maybe a trading instrument. I would not necessarily like throw a bunch of your money and just leave it as ZSD for some reason. There's really no reason to do it. And I think the way to look at this platform is you have price exposure to something very similar to Monero that's gathering a pretty good hash rate right now. In fact, periodically it's exceeding Monero's hash rate. And you can use the stablecoin as a convenience feature within the ecosystem, maybe a trading tool within the ecosystem so you can trade anonymously or whatever. I wouldn't necessarily use it as like a place to store my money at any point in the near future. In fact, one argument can be made, you never do that. And after many exchanges and whatever have seen what happened to Luna UST, including many of our portfolios, what has happened is I think people generally are going to expect a very high collateralization rate. And they're going to expect market makers, people that are exchanges, they're not going to want to print much ZSD unless it's maybe even above 800% collateralization, because they want to see a robust collateralization. They want to be able to tolerate a drawdown in the price of ZEF of maybe like 80%. Because in crypto, like, think about it, like, you know, early Ethereum dropped like what, 95% from the top or something, right? Like, so if Ethereum can do that, anything can do that. And I think the thing to realize is that the collateral needs to be able to handle that situation. I think it's better to always stay in a very hyper collateralized state. So the goal here is not to have all the world run on ZSD. That's a stupid goal. This is a capital inefficient system. I think that ZSD is a brilliant little convenience tool at this hyper collateralization. It's going to be people that love the primary coin, the ZEF coin, are going to like to use this in their wallet as an exchange mechanism, is my sense. It's what I'm going to use it for. Like, I don't know what the rest of you guys are doing, but that's my thinking. And I think all of these, the previous history of stable coins is going to result in a situation where most, you know, corporate entities or market makers or individuals are probably going to allow this thing to stay very hyper collateralized. Because who's going to take the risk of minting when it's questionable, right? Like, when the collateralization rate is under 500%, I think, you know, people are going to be really, really nervous about minting, especially given the volatility of crypto. So anyway, just some thoughts on how this all works. And I think some of that speaks to like why I think the ecosystem will flourish and why miners and previous Monero, Zcash, previous users of Dash and whatever else are going to find this interesting, and why I think hashing power may actually move to this and actually stay here if enough Monero people move over. I'm not suggesting like Monero is a bad network or whatever. It seems to be working fine since 2014. It's all good, but I think there will be some conversion of the hashing power to this network. So we'll see. Drew, do you have a comment, question? What's up, man?
Yeah, GM friends. Seffy, I learn from you every time I hear you, every time we interact and we talk. I'm a Solidity dev, and I enjoy keeping up with you know, other projects, other creators, other devs, and especially with my friends, like Clutch told me about Zeph. And, you know, it's fun to spot out other projects that are going to make people a lot of money this bull run. And, you know, and already are turning people, you know, at least on paper, up a lot of ETH. And so, I don't know. I just think this is fascinating. I think what you're doing, what you're creating, what your community is behind this movement of Zeph, and the way that you are handling this, it's just so fascinating. So, yeah, mainly here to throw flowers your way and just say keep it up, and appreciate what you're doing. I just, you know, just as some dude down in Florida. So thank you.
Yep. And I'm just some dude that bought the token because Up told me to, and then I learned about it. So like, I have a sense of the space. I've been around a long time, and I have a sense.
Yeah, but you've got a good understanding of it, and you can decipher it to, you know, however many people you have in this room and however many people you're going to talk to over the next number of months. You can decipher it and teach it really well.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it simple. Hopefully like get some principles out there of like why things do well and why things don't, and like what kind of things do users want to have and what things do users not give a shit about and stuff. Like, I think one thing about the crypto space is it's been around long enough, and DeFi has been around long enough, privacy coins and stable coins, all this has been around long enough that people have learned like enough lessons to write a book about it, really. And, or many books about it, really. And you shouldn't have to feel like necessarily all of this is being reinvented. We're reinventing the wheel from scratch. And a lot of mistakes of the past are great because while they might have hurt some people in terms of monetarily, the plus side is that all of those mistakes lead to new technology iterations and whatnot to create more useful systems, I think. And I think this particular system is like, if you believe that privacy systems matter, whether that's, you know, secret network, whether that's you know, like Zcash, Monero, Dash, whatever. And there's a variety of other ones that have been produced as well. If you believe privacy matters, then you probably believe that the ability to transact between a stablecoin and your privacy token probably matters too, because then you don't have to be stuck using a centralized exchange for such a simple process. So I think the concern with privacy coins is ultimately censorship regarding centralized exchanges actually keeping them, depending what kind of like regulatory environments, whatever happen. I think many people who use privacy for good deeds, not necessarily for, you know, criminal activity, understand and believe why these things have to improve. I think the thing about privacy is, I think the simple way to describe it is, let's say you have $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, you go to Starbucks to go buy a coffee, and now everyone knows what's in your Bitcoin wallet. That's just untenable. Like commercial establishments, human beings, they're not going to be able to live with that shit. Like, so BTC works well as a store of value, as do most of the open ledger systems. But what the trouble without privacy is that this is one of the reasons why commerce has not really commenced it at scale on, say, for example, Ethereum. Because commercial enterprises can't have their whole, you know, a paper trail of where all their customers' assets are going, nor can they give away business secrets to everybody in terms of where, you know, their money's flowing. So like, there's a lot of reasons why privacy matters. And right now, like the banking / credit card industry provides some layer of privacy, and obfuscates, you know, how much coffee you're buying or how well Starbucks is doing on that particular day based on their wallets and stuff. But much of the DeFi ecosystems don't do this. So there's definitely a crowd that believes in privacy. And there's certainly a crowd that is going to use privacy for nefarious purposes too, by the way. Like, that's a given. But that's just how life works. Like, a lot of people use dollar bills for nefarious purposes every single day. So like, there's nothing new about that, really. The question is usually like, how much nefarious shit can you do at scale? And whatever. So, but it's not that everyone that cares about privacy is are bad people. In fact, if you had $1 billion in your wallet and you went to Starbucks and the the teller at Starbucks is like, oh, wow, I'm dealing with a billionaire. I'm going to go home and kidnap his kids tomorrow. That would be a problem. So the lack of privacy actually facilitates many types of nefarious shit, too. So it is important. But
imagine all the different like, you know, we have targeted ad marketing and everything right now. Imagine how that gets if Bitcoin were to be adopted like that. Like, everybody would know what everybody has, and it would just get nuts. Like, all your data would the data that would the metadata that's being sold right now would be a dwarf in comparison to what.
Yeah, the unfortunate reality is for any kind of like transactional layer, nobody's adopting Bitcoin for this. It's not in its current state, not now, not ever. It's just not tenable at the at, you know, the way it's set up. So like there has to be some kind of privacy layer to allow that to happen. And you know, our existing monetary system and credit card system and everything else creates these a bit of obfuscation layers. But the primary difference is that law enforcement can actually get into those layers. And, you know, with a subpoena or whatever, that those records can be released. And that's where it gets tricky with crypto, is like the creation of a layer that actually is auditable. And so far, like, not a lot of great systems have been created that do that. One example would be Secret Network. SCRT is the coin for that. And it's a Cosmos-based chain that's been around for quite some time. And them and their team have been building on basically like a secret DeFi for quite some time now. What I have noticed, though, is privacy is not the most popular thing in the world. It's the thing that like you take for granted, because in the real world, like, there are layers of privacy that have been built into your life to some extent, but you don't really pay attention to them very much, because you just assume that no one's going to know what you spent on your credit card or doesn't care or something like that. But as time goes on, like, so, well, put it this way, the number of people that care about privacy is relatively small, because they have not been required to care about it because they haven't had their kids kidnapped or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, so they're, so usually you discover privacy is a problem when something really bad happens, and then you start getting nervous.
Sessi, what about the Lightning Network nerds?
What about them?
I mean, I wouldn't their answer to no one would use Bitcoin in a transactional way, when they say that's what Lightning is for?
Yeah, but it doesn't add any privacy either, so you're stuck still.
Interesting. So, like, they're not trying to address that issue, or like, is the idea that you have like a separate like operational wallet that you use for transactions?
In the but grandma's not doing any of that shit. The reality is that, like, so far as Bitcoin's concerned, it is like a complete failure as far as like a regular transactional medium. There's no business that I have that I'm gonna like admit, like, make a serious attempt to have accept Bitcoin. It's like, no one's going to want to send it to me, and you know, I'm not going to want to deal with it. Like, once I get it, like, it just, none of it makes any sense.
How would you get grandmas to use Zeph?
Oh, grandmas aren't going to use Zeph. That's the point. I'm not advocating at all for any kind of mass adoption scenario here. I think Zeph is for like elite crypto nerds. That's simple. Like,
is that going to be enough to pump it up? Like, pump the market cap up?
Yeah,
to,
I think so.
Something big.
Yeah, it's like, cool. Globally, there's enough users. Like, you know, Monero's at 3 billion market cap. I think it peaked out at probably 15 billion or something. Zcash and, you know, whatever else. These are all between like 500 million and, you know, a few billion market cap. And I think the stablecoin piece of this, if it remains functional, adds the ability to probably get this to more like 10 billion market cap comparatively. Like, I think that's possible.
What, and maybe you guys brought this up again, but where is it at now? Like, a couple hundred mil?
It's at about 100 mil, yeah.
And
the current hash rate is above Monero or thereabouts. It's pretty close. So it's quite undervalued now based on hash rate, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Can you just, I may have missed this, but Sefi, what's the... what's ZRS in comparison to Zeph?
ZRS is like the if you go to their website, you can kind of see the relationship, but ZRS is the collateral component. So in order to mint more of a stable coin, some of it has to be locked into the collateral vault, essentially. And that vault can be opened only when, and collateral can only be removed when the system is over collateralized by more than 800%. And you can't remove collateral if the system is under collateralized, under 400% collateralized. That's the basic mechanism. Yeah.
And is the reward of like contributing to the vault, you just get ZEP token?
You get, you get paid just like a miner would. You get paid part of the like money rewards and part of the transactional rewards in the system. So yeah, you're paid. So imagine this is just another way to generate revenue besides being a miner, pretty much.
It's also one of the strategic functions to help create demand on when ZEF price is falling, because people will want to have access to those additional or those extra rewards that are upcoming. Like every 120 seconds, another block is produced. And there's about approximately four ZEF that's going every 2 minutes into that pool. So as the price comes down, the collateralization ratio comes down, people see opportunity and they want to mint that ZRS so that they can ride the price back up, and then you have extra ZEF. So it's like Steffi was talking about, it's kind of like an additional flywheel that's created inside the system to help increase demand when people are wanting to exit.
Yeah, ZRS is one of the things that you're going to keep some money within the ecosystem. The liabilities in the form of ZSD is part of that in terms of keeping people in the ecosystem. The ability to trade between the unstable and the stable coin within your wallet without going to a centralized exchange and doing that anonymously is another reason why people will stay within the ecosystem. These are all things that none of the previous privacy coin stables did very well. I think Haven was probably the closest to it, but I think that had its own problems because you could wind up with a hyperinflation problem on that one. So I think this one solves a lot of the problems that a lot of the other projects have had. And it's probably like the first sort of like promising thing that seems like fully interesting to me. And I do think that has a potential sort of premium in the market in terms of possible future market caps and whatnot. Like, I think it's quite possible. And remember, Monero's $3 billion dollar market cap is the stabilized market cap at like the bottom of a bear market. Like, I think it was like 1.5 to 3 billion was the kind of like what I consider the higher low, so to speak, not the peak price of Monero at the top of a bull market, right? That matters, because like something to function as collateral, say for example is ZEF, it's going to function best as collateral after a like bull market and then a crash to the bear market, and then it becomes collateral, right? Like right now, nobody knows what the fuck it's worth. In fact, it could go to zero, so it's not really worth anything yet. But with time, what happens is you get price discovery to the upside and then to the downside, then to the upside again, and then to the downside, as you know how like speculative crypto bubbles work. All of that is the standard part of the process of price discovery. There's nothing nefarious about it, nothing weird about it. It's just normal. Speculators come in, they buy the token. Some of them there just for short-term profit. Then the hodlers will raise the floor price over time. Long-term users will raise the floor price over time, and then you get this slow like growth of these market caps. And I think, judging by where ZEF is now, the probability of higher price action is higher than if ZEF was, say, for example, at 10 billion market cap, right? Like, there is a sort of like growth multiple associated with being small, that the bigger things get, that gravity sort of affects them more. And like, for example, if you have Apple stock today, the likelihood of it 10xing in the next year is probably unlikely. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So valuations move much more volatile, much more unpredictably, and with a higher multiples, just like in the early stages. And that's where we are with this.
But you could say the same thing about Apple going to zero too, right? Like, it's the higher it gets, yes, the less likely. And that's the same thing with all cryptos, yes, and Bitcoin and everything else. Like, the longer and the higher they go, so like you said, the higher lows that are created.
In the case of, say, for example, Apple, like the bigger the ecosystem gets, the more true users it gets, and the more people that are willing to buy Apple stock if it goes down. So all that attention and all of that is kind of like a flywheel that continues to drive up the price of a stock. Similarly, with the price of a crypto, confidence increases with time, and that is where a lot of the valuation comes from, as well as like confidence that the security of the network is appropriate over time as well. So if Monero hasn't been hacked and destroyed in, since 2014 till now, they're probably okay. I mean, the odds are pretty good, you know. Same kind of concept applies here. Anyway, yeah, Cyan, what's up? You had, what was your other questions?
So, please excuse my ignorance. I'm learning as we go along. Based on what you said, the people that would be the biggest people that would be interested in this would be the billionaires with regards to the privacy of this, which would essentially drive the price up because they see the usefulness in it. And then my other question is, if I wanted to
To answer that question first, so like, first off, it's actually very difficult for very wealthy people to use this now. And the reason is, if you were to go onto the exchanges and buy ZEF, you know, with it, like, you, or for example, the ZSD, there's just not very much of it out there. So what will happen is you'll cause major slippage and price to increase. So right now, at this scale, I would say it's the smaller investors that are putting small amounts of money that it's most useful for. Big investors, this sort of thing becomes useful if it's like, you know, at a 10 billion market cap or 100 million market cap. It's, there's insufficient liquidity to like plug in large amounts of money without actually pushing the price up while you buy the token. Does that make sense? Like, and this is true for that and the stable. So yeah, like the really wealthy people, it could be a tool, but it's not scaled that way yet, but it very much could be. I think it's possible for it to get there.
And that's a little bit of a feature rather than a bug too, because then distribution of the coins that are in circulation are out there in mini wallets and not just in whale wallets.
Exactly.
I mean, we can't see it, but we know based on, because the wallets are hidden behind the privacy aspect, but we know based on the availability of what's available to buy at the centralized exchange is just not, like Stephanie was saying, you can't go in there with $1 billion and expect to not have a ton of slippage. So yes, I think that a lot of people that have like fat wallets and whales are probably picking up some of this, but they're doing it slowly, and they're doing it with the rest of us, like the little guys, because like Steffi was saying, once you get to the higher 1 billion, 2 billion, 10 billion market caps, that's when you can actually get a lot of liquid in and out.
Yep, exactly. So it's good that smaller, like, hopefully everyone understands what this is all about. Like, it's not necessarily good for whales to come in and buy like huge quantities of something like this. You want this to be in tokens be distributed in as many wallets with individual users as humanly possible. Every crypto project likes this as a final outcome. They try it with airdrops. They try it with fucking like different tokenomics and whatever else. Every project wants to have their coin in the hands of more users in smaller quantities, not gigantic quantities with single users. There is a network effect that comes from that. And so, yeah, if your, you know, $1 bag goes up to $100, that's better than some, you know, random that has like a $10 million bag that goes up to, you know, $100 million or $1 billion, because then that becomes a future seller. Small bags usually don't have to worry about selling, right? They like, people just leave it in there and they're like, whatever, if it moons, it moons. If it goes to $1 million, it goes to $1 million. I don't care. I'm just going to leave it there. And a lot of people genuinely forget about that they even bought the thing. They might buy it at an exchange, they stick it in their wallet, whatever, and they forget it for years and years. That's a good thing. You want that to happen. You don't want whales to come in necessarily. So token distribution is kind of like it's a whole nother concept and subject, but it's the fact that high slippage early during a project makes it hard to buy a lot of it indirectly is a feature, not a bug, like Up is saying. It does help with the long-term distribution. It also makes it so that like miners that show up, you know, yeah, the mining is profitable, but they know that if they just go and dump all of that on the market, that the price is just simply going to go down. If you were a miner right now and you're mining a lot of ZEF, it makes way more sense to try to sell into a market when the price of the, you know, the market cap is like a billion or 10 billion or something like that. So when people say things like, oh, the miners are just showing up, they're just going to like, you know, the hash rate's going up, they're just going to sell their tokens. That's quite possible. In fact, that's fine with me. The more token that emerges that brings the price down, some new users can buy. That's excellent. Like, that's what you want right now in a early network like this. But also, hopefully some of those miners stay for good, and some of those miners are going to hodl their coins for, you know, for much higher prices, which, you know, like a lot of people in the mining community, when they see small new coins, yeah, they got to pay their bills. They got to pay their electric bill or whatever. But after that, they might be perfectly fine with just holding the rest of their coins that they've acquired. you know, because a lot of people in the mining community are like sort of crypto hardcores, I would say. Like, what do you, you know, they're sort of in it to win it for long term. And I think they're more likely to hold on to their coins. I don't know, do you have any kind of metrics about the mining community and how they behave at all?
Yeah, well, there's the big farms are going to definitely like sell some to fund the electric rate. But at the same time, like you were saying, if you look at Bitcoin miners, they also HODL. And the reason why is because price goes up over time, like the zoom out conversation that everybody has. So this, I would imagine that all proof of work, and I've mined this coin and a lot of coins, and I do the same. Like, I don't usually, and this is what I personally do, I don't usually sell much of the coin to fund my electricity because I don't have a huge operation. But and I'm more of a spec miner, and that's what a lot of, that's what's cool about the CPU mining, is that you're going to attract a lot of spec miners, people that are trying to mine because they have a computer at home and it's costing them like a dollar a day, so it's nothing. They can just let it mine and sit in their wallet, and in 10 years hope that it goes somewhere. But like Seffy was saying, like that's a strategy that gets used. And that's partly why I think that this project is so successful, is that you have a lot of home miners and decentralization happening, so that you can't like just dump mine tokens on the market all the time.
Yeah. Remind me here, but is Caspa, is that ASIC mining or is that CPU mining?
It started out as CPU. And then, so I should back up. The way most projects all start off is CPU, then they go to GPU, then they go to ASIC. But RandomX has been CPU from inception, and it's an open source algorithm. And like even currently, they're always reiterating it to make it more efficient and to harder, because it's ASIC resistant. So, like if you go to their GitHub, and this is really technical, we don't need to get into it. But essentially, what they're saying, what they're doing is they're constantly modifying the algorithm again to make it more efficient, and so that it stays as a CPU mining algorithm. So Caspa did what the traditional POWs did and put their algo that allowed ASICs to jump on their network. And that's why their hash rate went through the roof, you know, because Bitmain's just pumping out a bunch of miners. But that can't happen on, at least with an ASIC, it can't happen on RandomX currently. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and that might limit the like the future market caps and things a bit. Potentially,
not really, because the like there's services out there like NiceHash, and that's what's happening right now. Like that's why you're seeing the hash rate jump around a lot, is that people are seeing the opportunity to mine it, and so you have like different like large farms or botnets or NiceHash like hash rental places where you have players that are providing decentralization and hash rate, but they're looking at it as a different opportunity than like the home miner. So like that was just in their Discord, and there's people, you know, that are renting 200 mega hash at like NiceHash and stuff. So yeah, I wouldn't think that it limits it, because I think that it actually opens up the possibility for more, because any PC can actually mine it. Like with an ASIC, you're limited to ASIC stands for application specific integrated circuit. So you're limited to that algorithm and that manufacturer. So if Bitmain goes under, Caspa's like algorithm would eventually have to find another manufacturer. But RandomX can use NPC.
That's one of the issues with ASICs too, is like the manufacturer centralization with the machine is a problem. So I think the longer you go with CPU based, you may actually improve overall decentralization the longer you can be CPU based, like Bitcoin used to be. But yeah, once people start creating ASICs, then like the problem is that there's only like one or two manufacturers in the world that make all the ASICs that you buy them from. And what happens if something happens to that company, or they get banned, or some shit happens? And next thing you know, you've got a problem.
Yeah, it happens on like the smaller networks that Bitmain's on. Like there's other manufacturers out there, and they just don't have the R&D that Bitmain does. So Bitmain will come in and like basically obsolete the machines that they make. So
there's another thing that kind of like might affect the growth of the network as well. And that is that, you know, with CPU mining, at least, you know, you can use that CPU for something else. The price of CPUs has not skyrocketed like GPUs have or ASICs have. And especially in a bull market, there's a tendency for GPUs and ASICs to skyrocket in price. And therefore, like the exact time you want more people to be maybe mining the thing on their own, on their personal computers or on their home rigs, you instead wind up with like people that find it unaffordable. And then so the network growth actually worsens as the cost of the mining rigs goes up, which is a problem for other networks like Kadena and things like that. So Yeah, I'm not too I don't follow the mining economics that closely, but I can see how like it could be an issue when the cost of miners goes up dramatically, and that might impair the growth of the actual network.
Yeah, potentially. That's why CPU mining, in my opinion, is like the most cypherpunk crypto native mining out there.
Yeah, because your CPU is actually useful for something else besides.
Yep. And everybody has a CPU now. Like most people have a cell phone or something that could potentially contribute to the network.
Yep. Cool.
I don't think people realize like RandomX can be mined from like literally anything. As far as efficiency, that's a different conversation. But anything with a chip in it that has like a CPU can mine RandomX. And there you like I've even mined it with like I said, a cell phone or a tablet, like a stupid Samsung free tablet I got from like AT&T. I was just playing around with it and set it up. It's fascinating.
Cool. Let's see if these guys have some questions. Conrad, what's up?
Hey, yeah. So thanks for having the space. I was just kind of curious, like I was one of the Luna people. And the thing that I thought was really cool at the time was just that, and maybe you can just speak on this, is like the bankless. Like I felt like Luna was building that type of, all the applications, the on-ramps, the off-ramps, the like banking, the credit cards, like it was really kind of going there. And then when I initially heard about Zeph, like I was like, oh, well, this could kind of be that. But then basically earlier in the conversation, you're like, you know, I wouldn't hold money in the stable. I wouldn't hold this. And so is this something that you want to do like later on, like that, like down the road, like, or what do you, maybe. Like, how do you feel about bankless? Like, I felt like
I liked it. I like the concept of it. And I particularly liked that about the Luna UST ecosystem. The fact that you could like go between your speculative collateral and you could borrow off that collateral within the ecosystem. And simultaneously, you could go to a stable coin if you felt like it, if you wanted to trade or you want to just hold stables or you want to pay for something. All of that's good. Like, I'm fully with you on that. I think all the reasons why Luna UST was loved by the users of that ecosystem. I think very few people that actually use the ecosystem was like in the Do Kwon's a scammer camp. In fact, everyone loved the fucking ecosystem. That's for damn sure. It was one of the most useful. It was not one of, it was the most useful like crypto ecosystem, I think, at the time. And like everyone's imaginations were running wild as far as like how many cool things you can do with it. With this, I would say it's a little bit different. I think this has learned some of the lessons of the Luna UST crash. It has traded off scalability for the peg in this case with hyper collateralization or over collateralization. And I think that's fine. I don't necessarily think we should have like, it should be like delusions of grandeur level kind of thing in terms of like what Luna UST was trying to do. Because this is a lot less capital efficient. What that means is a lot more money has to come into Zeph to be able to print any stablecoin. In fact, it's 400% more money has to come into Zeph to be able to print stable than it was for Luna UST, which were, you know, one Luna would be one UST and vice versa. So scalability has been sacrificed for safety. I think this project is useful for like just individuals that want to store some value, maybe like you know, have an emergency bag of anonymous funds, or if you want to have a bag of funds that you can send to one another anonymously, or if you want to trade from the stable to the unstable, because a lot of people here, let's face it, are just traders. People that want to make a buck, they want to like trade the coin or whatever. They're not necessarily like, you know, this is not the cure for cancer or some shit, right? Like that's not like, what you're doing with it.
Speculation.
Like, yeah. And, so you like the speculation, you like the fun of it, but you can do it within your wallet. I think that's, to me, that's good enough on this one. And I'm happy with that outcome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Until the next bankless type of scenario comes up.
Yeah. I mean, there will be others. There will be others. Yeah. But yeah, Cyan, you were going to say something else?
Yeah, actually, I was. I'm hoping I can connect with Up here because he just said you can mine from your phone, and that blows my mind. And I want to be a part of this. I'm very ignorant when it comes to mining. And you can mine from any computer. So what I'm seeing here is the XMRIG CPU is the first download. Maybe someone can make a thread or something with regards to mining, and then we can make a bigger network
there's some pretty good YouTube videos on that. If you just kind of like up, do you have links to that handy by chance?
I can find it, but I am terrible at posting stuff to the Jumbotron. I don't even know how.
If you're a speaker, you just hit the share button on a tweet.
Okay.
And share it up to into this space. It'll show up on the share.
Perfect. I'll do that then. I'll go into mute and figure it out.
Just take a second. But yeah, Sian, there's different ways to mine things. I don't know that the phone thing makes any sense. It's just not efficient.
It actually does, Steffi. There's a guy named Retro something, I forgot his name, but he mines with just phones and he buys them off of Amazon for like $50 a piece. And yeah, I mean, there's people if you go on eBay, they get like 30 phones and they like hook them up and run them in parallel. And yeah, man, like they're very efficient too. Like that's what I mean is that things are changing in the mining world.
Is that an iOS thing or is that like a?
No, it's an Android thing because you got to use. Well, I mean, sure, you could use iOS too, but yeah, like it's. I'll pin that guy's thread too. He does it with Varus, which is another CPU coin, but you can certainly mine it on anything with the chip. You just have to. It's all about efficiency, right?
Okay. I wasn't aware that it would be efficient enough, but okay, cool. Can you do them on M1 Max too or no?
Yeah, but I don't know efficiency again. I don't have one, so I can't like. I don't know how much hash you can pull, and then I have to do all the math with your electricity rate. That's the thing is that everybody in the world has different rates. Like you could go over to Europe and spend, you know, $1 a kilo hash, or you could go into the Western U.S. and get like 10 cents a kilo hash hour. So it just depends where you are.
Yeah, I might try my M2 and see what happens. I've got an M2 Studio, the big one. We'll see if it, you know, might see what it does, just for the hell of it.
So will the algorithm or can the algorithm ever change from random X to another algorithm? Or is it always going to be random X? Are we always going to be able to mine this way?
At this point, I think it's intended to be always random X, as far as I know. Because it has to stay a privacy algorithm, right? So like there's that's part of it.
The lead dev said that if random X was ever taken over by like if ASICs were ever figured out on it, that they would look at or talk to the community about trying to make it more decentralized. That's the 100% goal. That's why random X was chosen, was decentralization. So if that's compromised, then the community will have to talk about it.
Interesting. Yeah, Fish, did you have a comment? I think Fish was around waiting.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Steffi. Big fan. My question has to do with security. And can we do anything more secure than just the wallet on your computer?
Yeah, good question. I think more wallets are coming. There's, I think, a community member that's building like an iPhone wallet. Is there eventually going to be an app for a hard wallet, hardware wallet, possibly? I'm not sure when that's going to take place. A lot of small projects, what they'll do is they'll begin by, a lot of small projects will simply begin by offering a web wallet, which these guys have, and then a downloadable wallet, depending on if you want to like air gap on a computer or something. The only problem with that is like, then the question is, well, how secure is this thing I'm installing on my computer? Because, you know, we don't know the devs or anybody else, right? So there are going to be some people that don't trust downloadable wallets any more than they trust a web wallet. So I think all of those are like significant concerns that are like hard to be sure about, I think, as a, let's say, someone that's a non-tech person that doesn't like know how to read the code or the software for it. And we don't even know, you don't ever know for sure, like that code was actually what was compiled. And there's not hidden Trojans or something in there. So like, I'm just using the web wallet for now. And there's a reason why like I haven't thrown megabucks into a project of this size, is because like, I have no idea if the security is sufficient yet. And maybe I'm just like fudding myself into, you know, unnecessary like worries. But I think generally with this sort of thing, it's good to not go too crazy with it. Like just assume that things are not secure until proven otherwise. And then you can kind of like work from there.
I use a desktop wallet, and the way that I take care of my personal security with it is I just bought a device for it, and it was a Raspberry Pi. You could also buy like $50 to $100 like Nook, like a used Celeron Nook. These wallets are not resource heavy, so that would be my advice to people. And do your own research, not financial advice. But if you want to utilize the desktop wallet and you're afraid to utilize it on your regular computer, just isolate it by either getting like a virtual machine or buying a machine for itself. And what I mean by buying, like, people will say, well, why do I have to buy something that's expensive? It's not. Like, if you're going to spend $100 or $1,000 on Zeph, like, buy a $40 Raspberry Pi.
I think for the, like, less technically adept, I've understood to be that the older iPods that don't have cellular service, but that have Wi-Fi, or maybe the ones that don't have Wi-Fi are the best to use for these purposes for a cold wallet. Can anyone confirm that?
I think the idea behind that would be not to use the Wi-Fi, because then you'd be using the public cell phone network and your IP would always be different and you wouldn't have to worry about somebody jumping on your Wi-Fi and like having access to whatever devices are on the network. But that could work.
Well, it's for, you know, different people have different purposes. So the Wi-Fi one wouldn't be a cold wallet. It would be a hot wallet because of that connectivity. But they had those iPods that were like touch screens. They look like iPhones. They're like early generation iPods. And apparently like that, those are like next level for security. I don't know why. I'm not an expert. But that's just if you don't want to set up a Pi.
Or a little Nook or like a laptop. Like everybody has old devices, right? There, I'm sure a lot of people do that they think that are obsolete or whatever and they don't use them anymore. Like those are perfect for a crypto wallet. There's air gap.
You can even go so far as like making a separate login for each type of wallet. So let's say you use one for two different purposes. You have one on one login, another, and usually that's pretty good. The security for like users between like Apple computers and for Windows computers pretty good. Like the segregation between information between the different users is pretty strong. So it's, you know, not likely that if you install it only for one user that wallet that it won't affect the. It's unlikely it'll affect another user account. So you could just print like, you know, have like three different users: one for Zeph, one for something else, whatever, and you can use the computer for that in theory. So like it just breaks the security into different sections again. Yeah. So anyway, like, yeah, if anyone has any other particular questions, I think we've covered a lot of it. Like the website has a lot of like pretty decent data on it in terms of like what's happening with the network, the mining pools, what's happening with the hash rate. Yeah, an interesting thing is how fast the hash rate has been picking up, and people are joking about how like Black Friday sales, people are going to go out there buying computers today and like jumping onto the network.
Just a short comment here on the hardware wallet, because people were asking. I think it's not too difficult because there's on Ledger, at least, there is a Monero app. So they have an integration, basically the same signing stuff, right? So it shouldn't be too big of an issue to integrate that.
Yeah. An app would have to be created specific for that, exactly.
If you want to, I mean, you can probably just use the same app on the Ledger. They don't have to create a separate app.
I've never personally messed with Ledgers ever in my life. Like I've never had to use them. Like I think if you have reasonable, you use a reasonable computer, you can do pretty well without one as your hard wallet. Because like Ledger has its own problems, which I've never fully trusted. And anyway, but that's neither here nor there.
They also leaked everyone's private information online.
Yep, that did happen. So, like, just silly shit like that with Ledgers. I mean, it's not bad, like, for most people, and it's probably about as reasonably secure as you can get. But, yeah, there's not an app specifically for
that. No, but, I mean, just some people just use with Ledger comfortable yet. Unless they have some physical device that feels a little bit more secure. You know, have to push some buttons. And, I mean... Honestly, you know, most people with their passwords and whatnot, you know, this is so easy to actually really screw it up. I mean, most people don't even choose a proper password for even for the wallet, right? You have that wallet file on your hard disk and the app allows you to encrypt it. And it's pretty powerful as long as your password is not 123123, right? I mean, you really have to have a nice, decent, long password to actually make that kind of wallet file a bit more secure.
Of course. I'm going to have to get too deep into like operational security stuff. There's entire like videos and websites and all that shit about this and how to do it. Like, yeah, I think most of the people in this space are probably like probably reasonably computer savvy, reasonably like tech savvy. Hopefully have been around crypto long enough to sort out what their security strategy is going to be and also what they're going to do if like they die and you know, their wallet has to go to somebody or something. Like you have to have some tactic for that, I think. and nobody wants to think about that shit. So it's like, most of the time when people die, like, you know, your Zeph goes into oblivion and then my bags go up. But, you know, you do what you're going to do. but yeah, there's like a scarcity that happens because people just lose their wallets and stuff.
We were actually talking about this in another space for another project. And there was a lot of people shilling the idea of like marketing to like old people's homes and like,
yeah,
well, that hospice was, care.
That basically. Was here. It was this space. Bruce brought that theory up.
Oh, okay.
Just
okay.
Basically, that we should just basically like have all the old people buy it at the nursing homes, so that it like just force the scarcity. It's awesome. Anyway, so let me see what's happened today. Everything the market's overall looking pretty good. I think. You know, every like so many charts are just sort of like trickling upwards, which is good. I don't see any particular red flags at the moment so far.
I had that feeling last night of like, am I too comfortable in my spot positions right now? Because I like looked at my allocations and I was like far more in spot than I had in like dry powder, basically. And so I like had a little bit of a rough sleep last night. I woke up this morning and realized that things are looking way more positive than I even realized. I feel like I'm probably not the only one that's like over allocated in spot right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think going into halving year, like my sense is like, I just kind of like allocated most of what I'm going to already. I feel like, you know, just to wait and watch now for 2 years makes sense. You know, trying to like, you know, time other dips and this and that, whatever. I mean, I went through the entire bear market with a huge like amount of stuff. So like what else is new at this point? So whatever new things I wanted to get and whatever capital I wanted to throw at things, I sort of already done it. And I think the thing to do is just watch now. And I think spending too much time worrying about like the short-term price action of Zeph or anything of this type, my market cap doesn't make sense. Cause like the only reason I'm in something of this size is really for like 100x or 1000x. I'm not in something for this size to like trade the thing. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, you could try to kind of increase your Zeph bag or whatever else, right? Like, but it's probably safer if one's going to like be playing games trading, it's almost safer to do so on you know, larger assets, but maybe use like a little bit of leverage or something and then like play that game if you really think you can gamble the directionality. I think gambling directionality is really hard. And so like, I find it oftentimes doesn't work well.
Yeah. On a micro sense, not trying to gamble directionality at all. I think I just like had that moment last night of like, I had been head down for 2 weeks, just accumulating, researching, accumulating. And like, I came up for air and was like, oh shit, there's more spot than there is ammo now.
Oh yeah. That happens, right? Like now you're worried that if there's a dip, you won't have enough to buy.
No, I mean, like, I'm like 40, 60 right now. It's not like horrible, you know? I just like, you know, I had that overexposure moment feeling last night.
Yeah, but I think the charts of a lot of things look pretty good. I think there's a fair probability that going into having a year that we have a good up couple of years. I think we're okay, but we'll see.
Yeah, I expected more price action response around the holiday, to be honest. I think that with the crypto fight night, it kind of like everyone was just focused on things other than charts between the holiday and that for 2 days. So I think that now going into today and into early next week, we should really see like what the rest of this year will have in store for us, I think.
Yeah, do you hold a lot of stuff that you're worried about in any way? Like, I guess...
No, to be honest, well, okay, like I have maybe like 5% of what I have in allocated to like absolutely degen shit, like that I have no faith in whatsoever and will be shocked if it doesn't go to zero. But the rest of it is...
What do you mean, like little meme plays or something, or what? What are you doing?
Yeah, just meme plays and like I think I got into a couple days ago to CZ and Binance. Like those are not sound money. Like there's no technicals there,
really.
It's just sure they're not. Yeah.
You mean?
It's just stupid. But like that's like even hilarious. Dumber and shorter term like horizon than Grok maybe or something like that, but I don't even own Grok. But no, like 90% of what I'm buying is stuff that I either really believe in or that I hate, but will that I know other people will send to the heavens, you know?
You're just hoping for like bigger retard energy than your retard energy.
Yeah, like I just keep zooming out, and like I heard Ultra saying the other day, he's like, "Oh, I'm just gonna like keep buying tops. I don't care right now because your 10x is about to be my 100x," and like that's honestly like how I feel about it right now. I started losing sleep trying to catch entries and shit, and then I was like, "Wait a minute, like no, I'm gonna live my life, and I'm just gonna ape shit that I believe in, and we're gonna deal with this later."
Well, you know how it is. Like, everyone starts talking about their bags once it's done, like, a little 5X or something, you know? So you feel good about it. You're like, oh, okay, it's time to start discussing it and stuff. Like, like, yeah, price, no question, is, like, a consensus mechanism, and it makes people more confident. And then they wish they bought more. They're like, ooh, it went up. Now I should get more. Like, why didn't I get more? 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 Like, you know, so
that price kind of is like, it seems like price is, what's up guys, by the way, I'm working a lot cause I just moved and so I'm sitting at my desk and stuff. So I'll be in and out. But, I just wanted to say price to me, this, like this coin, first of all, I'm retarded. So just keep all that in mind. Like actually, truly, like I'm really stupid a lot of times. So keep that in mind, do your own research, whatever. But with this coin, it seems like the liquidity mechanism is different, and it protects from a lot of the pain that can come from price. The liquidity mechanism seems in a lot of ways is there to protect from that pain. You know, price can be very painful, and when price gets too painful, people sell. They don't sell because the price is bad. They sell because the price that it went to hurt them, you know? And so the first thing is to not be able to be hurt. So don't put in more than you can afford to lose. And then the second thing is to know that there are mechanisms to help assuage that pain. And those mechanisms involve ZSD. So I think that the technicals are really cool. And like I said, I'm retarded. So I really don't even fully understand the DJED or the privacy algorithm or the you know, the purple people leaders. I don't understand any of it, dude. So whatever is going on behind the scenes, I honestly don't get it all. And my brain's just not big enough because I have this, you know, there's Megamind. I'm kind of like that, but the opposite. Like, imagine if you had like a really, really small head. So that's me.
Small brain.
It's like yeah, mini mind. Yeah. So I just have to work with what I have. And but what I can see though is that the liquidity dynamics are just so cool. And I think people haven't even realized that yet.
I agree. Like that's kind of why I think there's a bit more of a flywheel here than the previous privacy coins and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think anything's
quite. I like quite flying and I like wheels. So wheels make you roll and and flying goes in the sky, and so yeah, sounds good.
I think that like the right curve perspective on this narrative too is like with the climate politically at the moment, regulation wise, like I think privacy is going to be a hot topic throughout this entire cycle. So I think, and we should all practice easily explaining what Zeph is. I think that the name of this space is great. I think this is perfect. Like if you can explain,
I need to whisper this when an Eric Voorhees here. Like I think I have him in DM. Let me see if I can message him about it. You need to come check this thing out. He's kind of a freedom guy. He likes Thorchain. He liked Luna UST even though it crashed. I mean, like he's very much about kind of like providing like sovereignty and freedom to people, and that's his vibe. So he'll like this sort of thing.
I mean that, okay, guys, like I've been here a long fucking time, and that was the original vibe here. That was like the whole vibe. No one was interested in like pictures or like anything else. It was like a bunch of like cyberpunks.
Yep, of course. Yeah, the beginning was just mostly about that.
I want to wait.
How's it going? Like, what's up, GM?
Building a cyber deck sounds so cool.
Hey, Finn, what's up?
Hey, I just want to... What you doing? Nothing, just chilling, relaxing. I want to address some FUD that I saw in the comments. Somebody calling themselves a Zeph God saying that this thing can't ever death spiral. And that concerns me as a member of the death spiral cult. I just need to know, am I wasting my time here? Will this spiral... this year
you want your bag to go to you want to, your bag to go to zero.
I just want to fly and then feel that drop
way, like all bags go to zero and
all dogs, you know, go to
spirals
heaven.
Go in different directions.
All bags go to zero.
Yeah, all bags go to zero eventually. So I think that zero can be up or down. You know, like infinity is very similar to zero too. So wherever we spiral to is where we'll go, and it'll be. I think it's really about having fun along the way, and yeah, it'll be cool.
Now, yeah, God there is just worried that, like, if we spread all sorts of things about death spirals, that nobody wants a token.
Well, like silly jokes on
that's
them.
That's his worry.
Jokes on them. We're from the Ryan Lyon School of Mass Media Psyops and Marketing, where you tell people not to buy shit and they buy shit. So let's fucking, let's zoe.
It's like here. The circle of life. You know, do y'all ever watch The Lion King? You know, like Mufasa
with Simba and all that shit.
King. Yeah, and Simba. I love that movie so much. That movie is so cool. And yeah, it's just the circle of life. Like, you know, you die and then you have to do your path. So
like I just think Elton it's cool John to be on the song, path. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So there is an example of the Djed protocol of what happens when the primitive goes like 85 or 90% down. And that one is Sigma USD. It doesn't have privacy features. It doesn't have a lot of things that Zeph has. But if people want to go like look at what happens and how it doesn't go to zero, that would be something that you could look at in the past. So yeah, Death Spiral is
they put up on the
Death Spiral is only possible in different universes, in parallel universes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. If it's going up here, it's going down somewhere else. The trick is getting to that universe before it goes down and catching that sweet, sweet ride. No, I actually also came up here to shill. We set up the ZephSpaces.com site. So if you need more of these Chepe spaces, I know you need more than 8 hours a day. I do, at least. You can find them all there, nice and organized for you. I even edited out the awkward silences for Coach Bruce because I know he hates those.
Yeah, so, Ben takes care of like
so enjoy that shit.
If you guys haven't followed Terra Spaces down here in the audience, Finn runs that and he basically has the spaces running here so he can record what's going on, and then this stuff goes on to like podcasts and things that people might or might not listen to. But what's the traffic like on the podcast for these things lately, Finn? Like what have you seen?
It's steadily going parabolic, as we like to say. No, actually, I haven't looked in a while. I don't get paid per click, so I don't usually look at that stuff. But that is a good reminder. I should dig those out and post them. If you scroll through the Terra Spaces Twitter page through all of the posts, like you'll see one every now and again that shows like all the stats and shit. But yeah, we get that shit up on like Spotify, Apple, Google, all the podcast platforms. So
and you just made one. You actually bought the ZephSpaces.com URL too?
Of course.
Interesting.
Makes it easy for people to find. Yep. Uno spaces, Zeph spaces, Terra spaces. I mean, we got all the spaces. So there's almost 4,000 of them by now. Pretty cool.
Yep. There's
also making AI bots of all of you. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. There'll be one day a bot of me talking like this when I'm dead and you'll be won't.
Or maybe there already is.
Yeah, that would be great. I would take two.
The NFT launch will be coming soon to a Zeph chain near you. I'm curious how many of those surgery computers Chepe's got mining Zeph for him by now. He probably goes to like all the Costco's by his house and like sets up the miners on all the tablets and shit. I know what you guys are doing. I got my recording computers mining right now.
Can someone talk about how to mine Zeph, how hard it is, and what the experience is like so far?
I put a video up on the Jumbotron. If you want to watch it on how to do it, the experience is you set it up and you live your life, and that's all you do because it does it all on its own.
Is this a Kush one, like set up and rolling? I heard people talking about it, but I haven't actually like. Does it actually work? That's pretty cool if it does.
Yeah, there's if you look at their token price, the price is reflecting it as well. But there's been a couple guys, right? So I've seen like two of them that people have posted on how to do it and how much hash they get and which setups they're using. I think I even saw someone this morning. Post like more providers are showing up as well to run out.
Does anyone have the alpha on like what the optimized equipment is for like, you know, maximizing energy usage for hash rate on this particular coin?
Solar panels.
I was thinking about going water wheel, but all right, dude. Fine.
Steam. Coal, good old coal and steam. I think that was talked about on a previous space. What's the best coal for mining yourself?
You guys, I've been thinking about this, and my dog, like, I cannot exercise him enough. I fucked up. I got, like, one of the most, like, insanely active breeds ever, and he's about a year old. So I was like, how do I hook up a dog hamster wheel to a mining rig? Because I will literally make millions of dollars. He never stops. If someone can build me this, I will pay, like, an ETH for it.
I saw a YouTube video of a guy that did that with, I think it was rats or mice or something, but he did it to use to charge his cell phone, so it's possible.
My dog will run like 50 miles a day. I will be rich, I promise. If anybody builds this, I'll.
Yeah, he just put like a the YouTube guy just put like a wheel with like a little generator thing on it and put some peanut butter on it, and every single time they would try to like run up to get the peanut butter, it would spin the wheel and, you know, charge your cell phone.
Dude, he needs like no peanut butter. He'll just go. Like, I've actually been trying to build him a treadmill for like a month now, like trying to figure it out. I'm watching some YouTube videos and stuff just for like the treadmill factor.
Like, so we're talking about hamster, like decentralization now or what?
You know, dog, he's talking like, about getting his dog to mine that. Next Mr. Gox. He knows how to use those buttons, the like speech buttons. This could get funny.
You're going to use like bioconductance, the difference maybe in the temperature between the inside of your body and the outside of your body, and use that gradient to like mine Zep or something because you're weird.
No, I meant like
put a probe inside your ass or something. You know what I mean?
Do you guys remember Mr. Gox, the trading hamster?
Mr. Gox, the trading hamster. What was that all about?
Okay, so last cycle, there was a hamster that out-traded all of us. And it, like, I don't know how it outtraded all of us. They, like, hooked up things in its environment that would, like, buy or sell or, like, go flat or buy spot or leverage or whatever. Like, you have to watch the YouTube videos. Just
this Google, is so funny.
Google Mr. Gox.
I see it. So if it goes through, like, one little toilet paper tube looking thing, it like, hits a buy signal. And if you go to another one, it... It hits a sell signal. That's how the creature chooses the buyer sells.
Right. Yeah. And apparently he outtraded all of us. And then at the pico top of the last cycle in November, he fucking croaked.
He died?
He died. There was shit. Like a story that was literally the top signal. Him. I shit you not.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was him and Beeple. Mm. If you guys didn't know. Top signals are always the most insanely obscure.
Yeah, like BBC.com has an article on the thing about Mr. Gox. That's very funny.
Yeah, so my dog uses those text, or not text, they're speech pathology buttons. So you can like speak your voice onto it. Like I have one that says like cookie and one that says like outside. And he like knows to press them, you know?
So like, there's a little thing that says buy triggered. Mr. Gox just placed a buy order for 90 XLM at €24.99. Like it's like it was like a social media thing, and you know you could. Oh, and inside the hamster cage was like a series of little like it's like a desk with a stool and some little funny little wooden like hamster chip looking like screens. It's kind of very weird.
There was like a 24/7 stream running too, I believe, that like you could just like check on Mr. Gox whenever you wanted and stuff. It was so much more wholesome than hamster racing.
That's funny. I like it.
It was great.
Crypto trading hamster.
It was devastating when he died at the top, man. I should have known.
How long did hamsters live? Is that just because like he just reached the end of his lifespan and that was the end of it?
You know, I like to think that he didn't die and they just like said that as like a funny ending to the saga, you know? Because I was like way too emotionally invested in this hamster's outcome.
You wanted that little bastard to get rich. Maybe
he moved into
a bigger pad or something.
Yeah, he could have had like a million hamster babies.
And he could be able to support them all, huh? Pay child support and everything.
Easily.
That's good. Anyway, yeah, any other questions, comments, thoughts about maybe
market action. You get more trading alpha from a hamster than most paid Discord channels, right?
That may be true.
It definitely made me question all of my life choices for the last decade when I was out traded by a hamster. We need Coach up here for the
scope around here and see what kind of crypto news is happening.
He was here on the listeners earlier.
One of the big things that's happening today, voting end is November 25th at 1500 CST on here, it says. Basically, it's the big change in the inflation rate for Atom. So right now, inflation rate max is 20% or something like that. And then that's going to be cut in half to about 10%. The idea being that staking this gets you less coins, but the idea is that maybe it will reduce sell pressure on the token and therefore, have benefits in terms of upward price movement because validators or whoever are not going to be selling as much token. So that's the big experiment. I'm not sure if it's going to make a difference or not, but whether or not it does, the meme is that it does. So that's all that matters. So it's number go up. So if you haven't gotten your Atom, it looks like the vote is at 39.9% yes, 32.6% no, and 20.7% abstain. And I believe it's 1% into the quorum where you have enough votes to actually make this pass. So another interesting piece of this is 70.9% of people have voted so far. And that's good news because that means that a lot of the folks are active on the network and voting and stuff. So it means that usually if there's a high voter turnout for a DeFi chain, it implies to me a bullish future, especially going to a bull market, as opposed to nobody paying attention, no one gives a shit, the chain is dead kind of idea. So anyway, Atom is definitely interesting. I've acquired it really since the whole bull market. So pretty much at the very bottoms, I think right now it's close to $9 or something. And I think I picked it up. I think I brought my average down probably right to around here. I think I bought a fair amount at 12, 10, maybe 9 and 7, something like that. But anyway, and then some of it, the inflation itself averaged me out because since the inflation rate was something 20% or something last couple of years, the inflation has actually balanced out my bag as far as the total coin count has benefited me in terms of reducing some of the price volatility. So I always kind of liked Atom with high inflation because if you're going to be a long-term holder, it benefits the staker by giving you a greater portion of the network at the expense of the non-staker in the network who is basically being diluted away. And I think that's kind of a plus side to me and helps with security of the network because it enforces staking because not staking is kind of punishment. But and it also helped me with price volatility because in the bear market, I could just leave it alone and it was printing enough, tokens that I just stake them and it would, it'd benefit my average. But lately the governance was that's a problem. It's validators are selling too much token. That's why number's not going up. And therefore let's make a governance change and change the parameters. A lot of change though. The reason why a number doesn't go up is not because of that. A lot of times number doesn't go up because market caps are already really high. And a lot of chains have trouble figuring out where new users are going to come from. That'd be probably the most obvious thing. And then not enough people talking about the particular token or the chain and whatever it's useful for. So when new users show up in the market, during early bullish market, they want to know what the hell something does and why they should own it and why is it going to go up or not. They don't want to know a bunch of stupid shit about governance and details about politics within ecosystems and stuff like that. So that's one of the things about DeFi L1 chains is they tend to have a lot of governance politics and stuff guiding the goals of the network. And I think the average user just couldn't care less in the grand scheme. So there's an element of that. And usually governance stuff leads to warring factions within a layer one. And those factions will have you know, they'll share all their FUD online, and the new user is like, wait a minute, the only thing I see that people talking about this particular chain about Ethereum or Atom or whatever is the FUD. So it does kind of tend to confuse newer folks. And most of the layer one chains, like if you're buying Ethereum today, if you're buying, you know, Atom or something like that today, and you're not in it necessarily for purely price appreciation, it's usually more like OG crypto folks that are buying those things at this stage, I think. Either that or people have no idea what they do and they just ape into stuff. So we'll see. But the charts for most of these things look pretty good as far as like coming out of resistance and decent probable upside to a lot of things if the market turns up. So we'll see. The other thing too is I'm wondering like this next year, what kind of like stimulus shit that, you know, usually, so like right now the Democrats have the president and, like by all intents and purposes, the guy's basically demented and really mostly just a complete imbecile at this point. Like there's no evidence that he knows anything. He's not like two brain cells to rub together, but that means that they have to like push hard to try to get him elected again. So what are they going to do? You know, like you need to like throw a bunch of money at the plebs. Basically you need to like create stimulus checks and shit. You got to throw money at them and you come out to vote. We can save you with this stimulus checks. Come vote for us. So my suspicion is that like with like credit card debt being high and, you know, consumers being cash strapped and you know, credit card defaults, car loan defaults and all this shit being like reaching all time highs. I think they're going to have this pressure to try to do something about that. And they're going to certainly have the pressure to do it before an election. So my suspicion is some kind of like wacky ass stimulus check shit is going to go out and people are going to buy their little meme coins and Doge and whatever else and pop it into crypto at some point. So I think there's a fair chance of that in the next year. I don't know for sure, but like historically that's been the case. And they'll usually spread that money somehow. They'll like throw it to like, you know, smaller consumers so that they can go and like, you know, pay for groceries and stuff. They won't necessarily be like, I don't think there's going to be like a tax cut or something like that necessarily. I think it'll come in the form of like throwing money to plebs literally so that, you know, everyone can buy their Big Macs and whatever. And there's a tendency for those folks to jump on Robinhood and different things and just like buy shit. So I think the stuff that hasn't popped yet, the stuff to watch out for is like stuff that is available on Robinhood and on Coinbase and stuff like that. Because when people get a little bit of money, they want to gamble it. They just tend to do it on stuff like that, like stuff that's readily available. They don't go in there and do research on Zephyr or something. You know, and protocols like this are for more like crypto diehards, I think, than for like total newbies. But we'll see. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on the market and what you're doing with your money. Ultra, you have any like theories about what you're doing with your cash right now? You're mostly allocated, you're waiting or what?
I have no idea what's even going on.
Oh, but did you keep most of your money on sidelines? Are you all in or what? Like where are you at?
I mean, I love Zeph, and I think that the back and forth between Zeph and ZSD is interesting. And
not just this though, in general, like in the crypto market overall, are you kind of like more heavily in, you're out, you're what, like you're waiting or?
I have enough to get me by, for a while. And then, you know, if I need any more, I'll get it. But for now I'm good.
But you're a dip buyer, basically. You're not adding that much now for anything.
No, I think that the dips will buy themselves in a lot of ways. There's a arbitrage opportunity here, and when I need it, I'll buy it, and then when I don't, I won't.
That's very insightful, Fish. What about yourself? you all in? Or you picking up stuff? What are you doing?
I was big into the Luna before the crash, and seeing that Luna
is that code for your broker? What?
No. That one hurt though. I got to be honest. But seeing that this new coin Zeph is it's like Luna and Monero combined, I'm like, holy smokes, this is going to be big. So I want to go in heavier. I'm like I said, I'm looking for more security and I have some ideas about that, but
let's see, someone new's popping up, Ray here. Let me see what he has to say. It's good catching new folks periodically around here. It's good, like actual human beings. Instead of like bot account. Oh, we did lost him. I think sometimes people join the space like and click the speaker button when they join instead of like the listener, and then they realize, wait a minute, I don't have anything to say. Anyway, yeah, if anyone wants to hop up, otherwise we can break and do something else today, I guess. Just watch the thing and have fun. Any other closing thoughts, Noob? Anybody?
No, not really. You have to work today again, I guess.
No, I got to get some groceries. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Doing the errands.
Something's up. You're still driving the Porsche around, or is it getting too cold?
It's cold. Yeah, these sports tires, they freeze, so you have to kind of watch that. These are Pilot Sport Cup 2s, and they're pretty good and cold. I've been able to use it all winter so far, but certainly wouldn't mess with them in the snow and stuff.
Yeah, I've been shoveling snow this morning.
Yeah, any snow in my car is going to be stuck because it's about as low to the ground as you can get. It's basically it's a race car. It's a track car, basically. You can get on the like Nürburgring or something like that with it and just straight up drive it.
And it's pretty light, right? So it's really bad with the snow.
It's not too light. It's about 3,300 pounds. They had to stiffen it up to be a convertible, but it's light enough. It's mid-engine rear wheel, so it's like at least you get that.
Yeah,
but the still, weight is on the wheels, but yeah, you're not going to risk this car in snow. There's no reason.
But still with the huge tires, it's like you don't get any grip, you know. It's
no, fun to drive in snow, it's not. Yeah, these are not snow tires by any stretch of the imagination. they're and they freeze too. Like the rubber is so soft, it freezes.
Yeah.
So if you leave it outside, sitting in sub-zero weather and stuff like that, you will have a, you just won't have any traction at all. It's really dangerous. Yeah,
and it's getting super slippery. Here we get a fine in Germany if we drive with summer tires after, I can't remember, it's 15th of October or something.
Oh, do you really? I guess on the Autobahn and stuff, it's like just exquisitely dangerous. It's
super dangerous, you know, if there's a little bit of moisture and it's getting like to the freezing point, they are so slippery, you know, and people don't realize.
Yeah, with these Cup 2s, I didn't bother switching tires to, I didn't switch to a winter tire this time, but... It's okay.
Really not worse. Just put it somewhere in the garage. You have a big garage, I guess.
I have other cars and stuff, so I just drive those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been heating the garage. Once I have my miner running, I'm waiting for those new chips that I ordered to come in. I hope they come
in. That's why you bought the fucking
I'm going to mine the damn thing in the garage to, like, yeah. My wife moved some of the plants and shit in the garage when the winter comes along, you know, the backyard stuff. So I'm like, it'll warm those, and then it will it'll mine some Zeph for me while I'm heating up my garage, making it comfortable.
So your wife, why is that heater making so much noise?
Yeah, that's true. Like, well, I mean, we're not in the garage too much, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So we're okay, like, what the fuck did you buy now? You know, that's gonna be the what is that thing? You know,
it's gonna heat the garage. Don't worry. Anyway, yeah. So go buy your groceries now. Nice.
Okay, see you guys later.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom over impossible loss. It's all moss and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, though the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure
figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines, they call it implausible. When model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle, beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few Z's, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality, stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.